AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Former Vice President Mike Pence appears before a grand jury investigating alleged efforts to overturn the 2020 election. CBS News also confirms that Pence testified more than 7 hours in the special counsel's probe. CBS's Robert Costa.
Sources tell CBS News that Pence prepared for this for weeks, talking with his lawyers about the chronology of key players, what they did, the memos they sent him, all to make sure he was ready for the questions from the special counsel.
Testimony is set to resume next week at the federal defamation and battery trial against former President Trump in New York. Trump's attorney has cross-examined writer E. Jean Carroll about a 1990s encounter at a New York City department store that she says ended with Trump raping her. CBS's Elaine Cajano.
E. Jean Carroll's legal team has a few witnesses that they are likely to call, including two women who were friends of E. Jean Carroll, whom Carroll says she confided in back in the 1990s after this alleged assault. You'll recall that Carroll did not report this to police at the time, and these two women could be used to help corroborate Carroll's story.
The days of diesel-powered trains in California could be numbered. The State Air Resources Board has approved a first-in-the-nation plan to cut emissions from trains.
The board wants to ban the use of locomotive engines more than 23 years old by 2030. Community organizer Alfredo Angelo calls it a breath of fresh air.
We're the ones living next to these rail yards. We're the ones breathing in the diesel particulate matter. Yes, it's going to be very expensive for them, but I think the lives of our local community members matter more.
The rule must be approved by the federal government before it can go into effect. Christopher Cruz, CBS News.
A Massachusetts Air National Guardsman accused of posting military secrets online has appeared in court. CBS's Catherine Herridge says federal prosecutors want 21-year-old Jack Texera to remain behind bars pending trial because they say he's a flight risk, has a history of violence, and tried to interfere with the investigation.
The government said that there was evidence that Texera had destroyed a computer, a laptop, also a gaming console in an effort to frustrate investigators, and that he had changed out his phone and email address, telling his friends he'd thrown it out the window or lost it at the window of his truck or his van.
A Michigan seventh grader is being commended for jumping into action on Wednesday. Dylan Reeves noticed the driver of a school bus passed out, so he grabbed the wheel and brought the bus to a stop. Warren School Superintendent Robert Livernoy.
Fortunately, traffic was light, and as the bus was slowing down, it started to veer into what would have been oncoming traffic.
The bus driver is still hospitalized. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and maximum success with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin's coronavirus emergency is officially over. The Department of Health Services says it will transition away from emergency footing as the Biden administration prepares to end the national emergency declaration in about 2 weeks. DHS Secretary Kristen Johnson urges people in Wisconsin not to let their guard down just because the emergency declarations are passing. Wisconsin's top Democrats are lining up behind President Biden's re-election bid. Wisconsin Democratic Party Chairman Ben Wickler says there's no path to the White House without winning Wisconsin. Congressman Mark Pocan tells the Journal Sentinel that progress under Biden is the fastest he's seen in 30 years. In sports, the Bucks are out of the playoffs after last night's Game 5 overtime loss to Miami. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Are you an experienced industrial painter, drywall finisher, or want to be? Do you want more than a job, but a high-paying career where your interests are well represented, ensuring a safe work environment? The International Union of Painters and Allied Trades of District Council 7 wants you. Bring your knowledge or ask about paid training. Learn more now. Call Tom Coyne, 262-488-4839, 262-488-4839, or go to the union's website, iupatdc7.com.
We'll be right back. Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
Milwaukee. You have to check out Mob Craft Beer,
the world's first crowdsourced brewery
where they turn your ideas into beer. Stop in their downtown tap room to try flagships, seasonals, limited release crowdsourced brews that you won't find anywhere else, and more. Mob Craft also has a pizza kitchen making craft pies with the freshest ingredients. And enjoy their amazing tap room featuring over 20 constantly rotating draft lines, indoor and outdoor seating on their dog-friendly patio, and a killer view of the Milwaukee skyline. Mob Craft Beer, located in the heart of Walker's Point in Milwaukee.
For more info, head to mobcraftbeer.com.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
We never will. I'm Rick Smith and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Politico, the rag that Politico is, caught my attention in a glaring headline. White House regroups after McCarthy's debt ceiling success. And immediately my mind goes, who is writing this crap? Seriously, who would write that? Well, Politico. The rag that they are. Now, understand, they then go into the fact that, you know, the quote-unquote success is not going to pass. It's not even really a piece of legislation. It's a proposal. But it's one of these things where, you know, the White House, they challenged the Republicans to come up with something, and they did. They gave them one task, and they did it. They've got a plan. Here's the thing. If I'm the Biden administration, maybe the regrouping is celebrating. Maybe it's getting Joe up out of the seat and jumping for joy, because what the Republicans have proposed, outside of the crazy fringe of the Republican Party, the rest of us sane people in society look at what they're proposing and go, that would crash our economy. The Limit, Save, and Grow Act, otherwise, as I've been saying, otherwise known as the Let's Shoot the Hostages Act, would do dramatic, drastic, horrible things to our economy. But that's the point. That's what Republicans want. And they know this is going nowhere. It's never going to be passed into law. They know it, because there's really nothing there. It's just their wet dream list. It's if we could get Biden to, forget that he's president and cares about anybody, we can get him to sign this. If you could get it through the Senate. But, you know, what it is it's their ideology of painfully slashing spending. Poison pilling Social Security and Medicare, slashing taxes under the guise of we're reforming things. And, of course, gutting regulatory oversight. Nothing new, nothing surprising, nothing to really have to regroup over, Politico. But, you know, this is why I struggle with our mainstream corporate-controlled media. It's about the horse race. Instead of going, Republicans passed their plan to slash spending by 22% and basically slam both feet on the brakes to have our economy come screeching to a crashing halt. A 22% cut to the Social Security Administration's budget would mean that, well, we'd be closing Social Security offices. Seniors, you want to apply for Social Security? Take a number. It's going to be a while. We would gut social. We would gut food assistance for seniors. As they point out, a million low-income seniors would lose food stamps. And really, again, one of the few hot meals people in this bracket get all day. And I know, they love the seniors. They care. We would cut oversight to nursing homes, just all kinds of bad. We'd be throwing, what was the number I saw? At least 430,000 low-income families who are headed by seniors out of their homes because you'd be gutting Section 8 housing. Again, I know it's all bad. Spending. We got to cut spending across the board. These are real lives. These are real people. And look, if you don't even care about them, I'm not retired. I'm never going to see Social Security. Well, they're gutting what Biden did on the Butch Lewis Act to help shore up multi-employer pension funds. So for all my union brothers and sisters out there who go, we need Trump back. Maybe if this were to pass, and it's not going to, and you can thank Biden for that. But they want to gut the Butch Lewis Act, which means your pension, if it's in trouble, kiss that goodbye. And across the board, 22%. Moody's Analytics said if this were to happen, it would meaningful. How did they put it? Meaningfully increase the likelihood of a recession, which is what Republicans have wanted all along. 780,000 jobs would be lost, according to Moody's Analytics. Now, again, this isn't going to happen. Because it's not going to get passed into law. We're not going to make those kind of draconian cuts. Republicans know Democrats would never allow people to be taken advantage of like that. But there's part of me that goes, maybe what we need is a jolt to the system. Maybe what we need is all these people who are supporting this kind of insanity to actually have it affect them. Because I think most people don't understand how government spending affects all of our lives. Whether it's the VA, whether it's the Food and Drug Administration, whether it's any of the oversight or the regulatory bodies that do the work that we take for granted every day. There's part of me goes, I don't know. You look at what they would do to the VA. A 22% cut, according to the VA, would mean 81,000 jobs would be lost. That's on top of the 50,000 that are vacant. You'd have 30 million fewer outpatient visits for veterans. And they said backlog of disability claims would go up something like 130,000. But again, we love the troops. And this is the bizarre place we're in. Because, just yesterday, you couldn't get the Senate to pass a bill to study the effects of cannabis for veterans. I mean, it's simple. How does that not happen? How do you not go, the VA wants to study, and have clinical trials on whether cannabis can help veterans who are suffering from chronic pain or PTSD or any of this stuff from using it. They want to study it. Republicans say no. Filibustered it, actually. They didn't get the cloture vote. And this is one of those moments where you go, there's a party in this country who's praying for disaster, for praying for chaos, so that they can blame Biden. That's all this is about. It's the political gamesmanship of blaming that guy. And it comes back to all of us. And what are what's the Republican option? I listened to Donald Trump give his spiel on Truth Social, which I got to play this because it's just wow.
Absolutely true. Biden is guilty of obstruction. 1,850 boxes unchecked, many found in Chinatown, heavy on classified documents. He has been totally uncooperative, won't show the documents under any circumstances, and is fighting like hell. I very simply went by the Presidential Records Act. Very importantly, it was designed and written for this purpose. Have a right to declassify and did absolutely nothing wrong, but was purposely given by the DOJ and Biden, a Trump-hating prosecutor, Jack Smith. He's a Trump hater. His wife's a Trump hater. His family's a Trump hater. They all hate Trump. They hate him with a passion. They'll do anything they can to hurt Trump. But he's a harasser and an abuser of our people.
I'm sorry.
In order to obstruct and interfere with the 2020 presidential election. That's why they're doing it. We're leading by a lot in the polls. If I weren't, I believe it would all stop. Or if I weren't running, I believe it would all stop immediately. But that's not going to happen. The public will not stand for this unequal treatment. Joe Biden is guilty. I am not at all. Thank you very much.
What the hell was that? I mean, this is who the Republicans have. This is the guy that he's still fixated on 2020. He's still fixated on the past. Still fixated on, well, him losing. There's no vision for the future other than anger and retribution. There's nothing going forward. And this is where the Republican Party is. And this is what's frightening to me. Because it appears to me that they're in the last throes of being able to hold on to any sense of reality. They are planning on doing nothing to help. And I said this yesterday. The reality is they have no plan. They have no way forward. And all they keep coming up with is indecency. And this kind of, I listen to Trump talk and it's mind blowing. And quite frankly, scary. Now, he did do something that I found interesting. And I think he's slipping a little bit in the name calling game because he's always been the good name caller. You know, he's always come up with a crooked Hillary. Well, evidently we're recycling crooked Hillary. Hillary now gets a break. It's now crooked Joe Biden. Very clever. And it's all because he's really trying to defend himself on this classified documents thing. And if you listen to him, you know, rattling off the nonsense there, it's the kind of projection that I've been telling you Republicans do. When someone's doing something and they know they're doing something, they got to accuse somebody else. As my mother always said, if someone's pointing their finger at you, there's three of them pointing back at them. This is that. This is him going, I know you are, but what am I? This is that kind of, is this the best we can do? Seriously. I know Joe Biden can't get a sentence out, but at least we're investing in infrastructure. At least there's policy that's moving us to reshoring manufacturing. At least there are things that are trying to help. Even if I don't agree with all of them, at least there's some way of going, hey, working families, we're going to try and help you. All I get from my Republican friends is grievance and anger. And how do we stop that? How do we talk about issues again? That's what I want to know. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday I talked about decency. You know, just being a decent person. It's one of those things that my mother taught me as a child. Treating others as you would want them to treat you, as well or as badly. You know, the golden rule, or at least the silver rule. And I got a ton of email from people, you know, going, you know, that's why Republicans are fighting for our kids. And I'm going, no, that's not what we're seeing. And the weird thing is this is the bizarre point. And I got a bunch of stories today that just highlight the fact that, you know, these are people who won't protect their own kids. What do you think make you think that they care about yours or mine? And I look at Montana Governor Greg Gianforte. Evidently, and I didn't know this, but Greg has a 32-year-old non-binary child who's gay, David, who's lobbying against the anti-trans bill that Montana is moving forward that Gianforte is going to sign. This is one of those things where you go, he's legislating against his own child. Again, it doesn't matter about your kids. This is about his kids. He is willing to go after his own child. And it's twisted and bizarre to me, but this is the kind of thing that's sweeping across red states. I look at Kansas. Kansas just enacted what they're saying is the most sweeping anti-trans bathroom law in the country. They overrode the governor's veto. In fact, they've hurried this so fast, they have no clue how they're going to actually enforce it. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. But no idea how you're going to enforce this, other than you were going to set up curtains and start doing random checks. You know, when I used to play baseball, the coach used to come by with a bat and hit us in the you know where to make sure we had a cup on. Can't do that anymore. But back then, got away with it. This, are we going to do that? Is that where we're going? And you just look at this stuff and you just shake your head and go, how did we get here? I mean, speaking of Kansas, there's a Republican senator, a guy named Mark Steffen, who was having a meeting with people, your basic, you know, constituent meeting. And of course, they were talking about the issues of the day. And this 22-year-old Wichita State graduate and campaign organizer with The Loud Light asked, you know, how this legislator, a very Christian legislator, how they would approach a non-Christian constituent. And the guy's response was, I'd be happy to try and convert you. And that wasn't a joke. And this is the weird part of this. And when he was asked about it, he denied it, although it's on tape. And it's just this kind of craziness that we find ourselves in, that these ideologues are running our government. These ideologues are passing laws, and these people who clearly, as I said, don't care about their children. And what do you think they're going to do about yours? Which brings me back to Montana. Representative Kerry Seekins, Republican of state representative in Montana. I just got to play the clip. This blew my mind. This just blows my mind.
Big issues that we have heard today and we've talked about lately is that without surgery, the risk of suicide goes way up. Well, I am one of those parents who lived with a daughter who was suicidal for 3 years. Someone once asked me, wouldn't I just do anything to help save her? And I really had to think. And the answer was, no, I was not going to give in to her emotional manipulation because She was incapable of making those decisions, and I had to make those decisions for her. I was not going to let her tear apart my family, and I was not going to let her tear apart me, because I had to be strong for her. I had to have a vision for her life when she had none, was incapable of having none. I was lost. I was scared. I spent hours on the floor in prayer, because I didn't know that when I woke up, if my daughter was going to be alive.
I mean, stop and think about this for a second. Stop and think about what she is saying. Stop and think about the words coming out of her mouth. Yeah. I would rather risk my child than go through a process of getting them the help that they need. I mean, it's quite remarkable to me. Now, she starts with, they're going to get surgery. That's not what gender-affirming care is. There are 100 steps before you get to that. The fact that this kind of narrow-mindedness exists makes me go, this is why I think the state has to step in cases like this. This is someone who would, and because it comes back to religion, I believe. These are people who would let their children die for their ideology. That's frightening. Let's go to the phone. It's got Alice on one. Hey, Alice, what's on your mind?
At the beginning, when you were saying, reading what Trump said, did I miss something? I know I've been busy lately, but did I miss a whole bunch of documents being found?
No.
Okay, good. So we're talking delusions.
Yep.
Okay, and not on my part. Gotcha. And as for the lunatic woman there, mayhap she needs to keep her religion to herself. But, everybody has their life to live, but apparently if you're one of them, meaning a Republican, then you get to choose what the other people live. But have a good day, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, this is, this is the part that's scary, truthfully. I know people who think this way. I think back to a friend years ago who, when I said, look, what would you do if your daughter had to go and get a backroom abortion and she died from it? And he looked me in the eye and said, would not shed a tear. And as a parent, I don't know how you can look at your child and say, I'm going to do everything I can do to help guide you and to help get you the help or the help that you need. Now, look, I don't know how I would deal with a situation with a trans child. I have no idea. I'm going to be completely honest. No idea. But I come back to my core belief in this. This state representative, that state senator, Gianforte, DeSantis, Trump, any of them, they should have not a say. And what's interesting to me is my Republican friends are screaming about parental rights. Isn't this part of parental rights? Now, I keep having people say, the kids can do that on their own. No, they can't. They cannot. But here's the thing. With people like this state representative who's like, no. At what point does the state step in? Knowing what the statistics are. Knowing that if you're not getting the help that folks need through, any number of the alternatives, that suicide rates are through the roof. What do you do with someone who goes, I don't care. It's my belief. What responsibility does the state have? And hearing the woman there say, would I do anything? No, I'm not going to do anything and everything. That's frightening. And, that's her saying the silent thing out loud. That's her admitting. That's her admitting, that there's her ideology and her belief structure. And it's no wonder. It's no wonder kids have a heightened suicide rate with parents like that. I think back to the story I told yesterday about I was dating a person whose brother was gay, and the friends that he had telling the stories that their parents wished them dead, that they were thrown out into the street penniless and driven by when they were homeless and all kinds of horrible things that as a parent, I can't even begin to fathom. And it comes back down to that just being a decent human being, respecting others with a bit of compassion, especially your own child. I mean, this is mind-blowing to me. But I guess not surprising. Should I be surprised? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. And do you know...
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Former Vice President Mike Pence testifies before a federal grand jury investigating alleged efforts by then-President Trump to overturn the 2020 election. CBS's Robert Costa.
This is very significant because former Vice President Mike Pence was present at the creation of all of these legal and political schemes to stop Joe Biden from getting certified as the next president of the United States.
The U.S. Army says two military helicopters have crashed during a training flight near Healy, Alaska. First responders are at the site. No word on how many people were on board or the extent of injuries. The AH-64 Apache helicopters were from Fort Wainwright, based near Fairbanks. California's Air Resources Board approved a plan to cut diesel emissions from trains by 2030. Community organizer Alfredo Angelo.
We're the ones living next to these rail yards. We're the ones breathing in the diesel particulate matter. Yes, it's going to be very expensive for them, but I think the lives of our local community members matter more.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin's only oil refinery reopens this summer, 5 years after it shut down following an explosion that injured 36 workers. The AP reporting the U.S. Chemical Safety Board found the refinery's lack of safeguards during a maintenance shutdown led to that blast, causing $550 million in damages. The Canadian-owned refinery in Superior is expected to resume full operations by the end of June and employ some 350 people. The national COVID-19 public health emergency ends May 11th, but hospitals remain busy with patients who had delayed care during the pandemic. Doctors say they're catching diseases at later stages because of those delays, and now they're seeing patients with more serious health problems. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
Hi, this is Lindsay Kynard at 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK The Shaw. Here are upcoming events happening in the area. Attention wine lovers, check out a Cabernet tasting at Crush Wine Bar in Waukesha this Wednesday starting at 6:30. RSVP to reserve your spot by texting 262-227-7280. On Thursday, come get your laugh on and see comedian Josh Blue at Milwaukee Improv in Brookfield at the Corners. Doors open at 6:30 and the show begins at 8. Want a free ticket to Summerfest? Come support local students by donating needed hygiene supplies this Friday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Briggs & Stratton headquarters for their supply drive. And finally, visit Art in the Green, which is a two-day indoor art festival at the Mitchell Park Domes. The event starts at 9 and goes until 4. Tickets can be purchased at the event or in advance both Saturday and Sunday. If you have an event you'd like us to share, let me know. Email me, Lindsay Kynert, at info@civicmedia.us.
Weather brought to you by Taqueria Miyagi, Waukesha's authentic Mexican food truck, which is now open and ready to serve you. Find us at 1610 Lincoln Avenue in the BP gas station parking lot or call us at 262-278-6590.
First, their closure scheme. This is Jim Hightower saying, as one 10-year-old student in Llano succinctly testified, it's not the county's job to burn the library down.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Before we get on to our next guest, I want to quick get a phone call in here. I got David in Milwaukee, wants to weigh in on the trans issue. David, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hi, Rick. Really quickly, good topic. I actually have a cousin of mine that has transitioned, but she's also 30 years old. And, you know, that's her prerogative, and now she's, you know, changing into a man, basically. But again, with kids, that's a whole different thing, because when you do something at 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, that is a permanent change. I don't have a problem with somebody if they're 18 or older doing it, but when they're under 18, no, the parents should have say it's completely different with the abortion, because an abortion, obviously, that's a, you know, that's a situation where if the child is, you know, been raped or whatever, it can be corrected quickly. But when you start talking about transitioning and doing all that other stuff, that is way too early of an age to start putting an individual in that and having to make a decision that they could regret later in life. I think it should be you wait until you're a little bit older in order to make that decision. That's just me.
Yeah, no, and look, and I understand it, David. You know, the reality is all gender-affirming care is not under the knife. There are so many steps that you get to before that. And my point is I don't understand it either. I've had friends who have transitioned, and I've said the exact same thing. I don't understand what you're going through. I'm fortunate I don't, but I hope this is what makes you happy and lets you lead the life that you were hoping you get. I hope this is it. And for kids, look, I come back to the point of I don't want zealots making those decisions. I still think as a parent, I'm going to have hopefully the best wants and hopes for my kids and have professionals doing this instead of people who are willing to let their children, screw them, let them commit suicide if that's where they're at. That's where my problem is. But it's a much, much more complicated issue than just this black and white stuff we're being fed. Do you agree?
Well, you know, everybody's different. And again, I do think we have to look at the bigger picture that when we're talking about young people that are potentially thinking about this or wanted doing this or whatever, I think we got to say, hey, listen, you know what? This is there has to be a line saying, you know what? This is too much a big event at a very early age. And granted, maybe they're not going under the knife, but I don't think that is the proper time to really get into all this, because they're young people. They're, you know, kids have wild imagination, and when you're a child or you're a kid, you know, you can change things on a dime. And I think we just have to encourage them to be, okay, you know what, hang on, hold your horses. You can't, as a parent, you can't give to every wish that they want. You know what I'm saying?
No, this is the thing, David.
You have to say no on occasion.
This is the thing. You know, nobody's saying that anyone jumps into this just because, hey, today I woke up and I'm going to change my mind. This is a long, lengthy process. But I appreciate the thoughts and your input, David. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you, Rick.
I now know this topic is going to have to come up with my next guest, who is a reporter over at Raw Story. Sarah Burris, one of my favorite people on the planet. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Happy Thursday.
I'm assuming you're going to weigh in on this.
So one of the most important pieces of gender-affirming care is counseling. It's the initial stages of every single piece of transitioning that has to take place first. Before you can do medication, before you can do surgery, there has to be a lot of counseling, and it has to go through like many, many, many years.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is where the right does, this is what the right does masterfully. It's the same thing with the abortion issue. You know, they make it sound like they're drive-throughs. You can go through, I'm on the way to school, I've decided I want to change today. I'm going to go through the drive-through sex change lane at the fast food place. It's not. This is a long process, and there's so many more components that even I'm still learning about, because I now have to. This isn't my issue. It's not an issue I want to talk anything about, But when you've got, you know, people like this, this state representative who said, you know what, I'm not going to do everything I can do to help my kid, it scares me.
It's also exceptionally rare for surgeries to happen before you're 18. In some states, there are already laws that exist for this kind of thing. In some cases, they never have surgery.
Right.
You know, it just depends on the individual. But again, like, this goes back to the overall idea of you as a legislator have no right to make a decision about my child or your child or his child or their child. Nobody does, because these are all complex issues and parents know them better.
Yeah, is it too complex for our political system right now? I mean, the sad reality is we can't seem to have an honest conversation about what this even is. Because, you know, look, it took me a while to figure out the terms and all of this. Are we capable of having this conversation?
I do think that we're capable of it, because I don't think Americans are that stupid.
I don't know.
I think the issue is just saying, you know, do you want the government telling you what books your kids can read? Because that's what's happening in Florida. Do you want the government to tell you? I mean, this goes back to the whole thing. Remember in New York, whenever they were saying you couldn't buy big gulps anymore and conservatives were losing their mind over it. It's the exact same nanny state that they have been cursing for decades. And here they are proposing the exact same nanny state. We want to know what your children are reading, what their teachers are saying to them, who their teachers are married to. I mean, it's just, it is a level of ridiculousness where it's just like, get out of my life and go make policy about the government, not about me and my family.
The one good thing that's come out of this, I mean, at least from my perspective, is I didn't know so many people cared about women's sports.
Right? If only all of the people who care this much about women's sports were actually watching women's sports, then maybe Brittany Griner wouldn't have had to fly over to Russia to make extra money and could have been fine in the WNBA by herself.
Now, I do have problems with combative sports, and I do have a problem with that. Like I've said before, I watched an MMA fight that they should have never been in the same ring together. But again, this is a conversation that we just can't have as a society, because it's too ramped up.
And I think that there are too many people who are trying to make it into something that it isn't. Too many people are using this as a wedge issue just because they want to make, you know, jokes about cutting off a wing.
Exactly.
Thing that I feel like happens so much, particularly with Matt Gaetz. He talks a whole lot about penises.
Yeah, they seem to be fixated on it. They seem to be fixated on children's private parts. But here's the thing. And look, you know, as a parent, if it were my child, I certainly don't want, you know, some of these people telling me what to do. But I would be I'd be almost impossible to agree to a lot of the things. And I think a lot of parents are the same way. I think what's being sold by the right is that government's going to make your child do this, that there's going to be someone who's turning your kids. And that's not factual. That's the fear that gets people all riled up.
It is. And I think what Democrats should really do is go to parents and just be like, is this a problem for you? Then why do you care? You know, if this is not a problem that you're dealing with in your family, in your home right now, what makes you think it ever would? Really?
Yeah. No,
I feel like you would see some signs of this, you know, before your kid turns 10 years old.
Yeah, it's a much more complex issue, and and having had some of these conversations with people, I know there's no policy that you can make one size fits all, and that's my problem with all of this stuff. If you're using the law as a bludgeon, that's a problem, and there are no simplistic answers in this world. And look, you know, I've said before, I would struggle if it were my child, but I don't want the government telling me what to do. It's that simple. I want to move on because this wasn't where I wanted to go with you.
Sorry.
But I appreciate it anyway. I wanted to get your thoughts on the testimony today. A couple of testimonies. Evidently, Mike Pence testified in front of a federal grand jury. Do we know anything about Pence coming in and talking about the day they wanted to hang him?
That sneaky, sneaky bugger. He crept in through the garage and took a special elevator up to the grand jury floor so nobody would see him. And
yeah, so he knows all about garages, doesn't he?
Right? He spent a lot of time in that Capitol garage. We don't know anything that was said. The only person that can talk about it is going to be Mike Pence. And my guess is that he has been running so long to not say some of the things that he probably had to say to the grand jury that he's never going to tell.
Yeah. But the important part is a vice president got called into a grand jury to talk about the treatment and the pressure put on him by the president. That's a big freaking deal.
It's a huge deal, and it's also a big deal in terms of the timeline, because we've had everybody now come before this grand jury. I was struggling to try and figure out who hasn't come before this grand jury to talk about it. And I mean, Mike Pence is the kind of guy that you bring in at the last part of it before, you know, if some indictments start to roll. And, you know, I don't know if that means that Trump's going to be indicted or if that means that Mark Meadows is going to be indicted or, you know what.
Yeah, get your bingo card out. It could be anyone. The person I want to hear testify, I want to hear Mother. I want Mother to testify.
She was there.
She was there. She's got the stones. I can't imagine she's all too thrilled. Just throwing that out there. Also, another trial today. A little, it's court day. The E. Jean Carroll trial. Any thoughts on the testimony that came out of that?
So what was interesting today is, you know, yesterday we saw a little bit of the Carroll stuff. Mostly it was with her lawyers asking her questions. Today it was Donald Trump's lawyer, the bombastic Joe Tacopina, who really was trying to press her in a way that I think made him look bad. Asking like the same question over and over and over again, which really hacked off the judge, who is like has a very low BS level. This judge does. And so there were a couple of times where the judge was just like, all right, quiet down with that. You know, like we've heard this question enough. So there was some stuff where, you know, he was pressing her on a lot of questions. The thing about her story is that it really hasn't changed. She never really knew specific details like the date, you know, things like that. She knew, but every single other detail that she has ever talked about has been pretty consistent. I think, too, her story where, you know, she basically came home and immediately called some of her friends to talk to them about, like, what do I do? And them telling her, this is a really bad idea to come forward. Don't do this. You know, you're going to get destroyed. Which at the time, that's a little bit like what the world was like.
It
right?
was what
like
the world talking was about. Like. Yeah.
New York City with Donald Trump, one of the wealthiest, self-described wealthiest men in the city, with a lot of lawyers, which is another thing that she said today was, you know, he has all these lawyers. He's got like 200 lawyers. Look over there. He's got two tables of lawyers. And it is a startling contrast, I think, the way that things are described in that courtroom where you have Donald Trump's empty chair and the like 200 lawyers, right? Not literally, figuratively, hyperbolically.
Yeah. How do you think that's going to play? The fact that Trump hasn't shown up. Do you think he will?
Yeah.
Will he show up or is it just all going to be deposition testimony?
So the problem is that they basically had to tell the judge by the end of today if he was going to show up or not. Because the judge was like, I'm not going to have this whole like last minute kind of thing where he just shows up and is like, hey, everybody, because that's ridiculous. What has been happening, though, is that Donald Trump is basically testifying without being under oath on Truth Social, where he's ranting and raving. And that was basically how the day started yesterday. And then it started again today, where it's just like, you need to tell your client and his family to shut up, because this is a problem. And I think he's getting very close to the judge instituting a gag order if he doesn't calm down. We'll see what happens tomorrow. But I do think that like the big piece of it where, you know, there are all of these things that E. Jean Carroll can say whenever she's talking and there's no one to give the counter story, you know, or to explain things.
Well, all he's saying is it never happened. I mean, so if his argument is it never happened, I wasn't there, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, what counter argument could he give other than I wasn't there, don't know what she's talking about.
But his problem is that hasn't been his story. His story is all over the place. Like the first thing was, well, I don't even know her. I've never even met her before. And then it turns out there was a picture of her and him. And then it's like, you know, well, she's too old. I would never be attracted to her. And then when he was giving his deposition, they showed a picture of her and he thought that it was Marla Maples, his ex-wife, and it was E. Jean Carroll. And so there are lots of pieces of his deposition specifically where, you know, there's really no way for him to explain away what he said and or to say like, oh, you're taking that out of context. Like none of that can happen because he's not there and his lawyers can't, you know, testify for him.
Yeah. Well,
so I think it's all of that is going to work against him.
And yet he had a rambling Truth Social thing today about something. Biden's got 1,800 boxes and, you know, he's as, you know, as innocent as the driven snow. And it was rambling and insane, but it shows me that I don't know. I think he's struggling here.
I think he is too. And that's the other piece of the whole document case is yesterday his lawyer sent a letter to the House Intelligence Committee and basically said, help, you know, like we as the lawyers, we went through all 15 of the boxes that Trump handed over to the National Archives and there's nothing in there. We really need you guys to step in here and tell the DOJ to leave him alone. And except that they said it in like a really crappy, like mean sort of lawyerly way. But what was interesting about it, I thought, is that they were only talking about the 15 boxes. So the first encounter that Trump had with the National Archives before they started calling the FBI was he gave them back 15 boxes full of crap.
Right.
And then there were like five times after that where they found out there were more things. There were classified documents. There was a computer. There's a thumb drive. You know, there was an envelope. And basically that's when the FBI showed up at his door, right? So, and they still think that there's more, right? That's the other part of this. So it's just funny that they're just trying to change the story about, well, there's nothing in those 15 boxes. Like, oh, tell me about everything after that.
Exactly. You know, because you know if you stayed in one of his hotels and you took an ashtray or a towel, they would hunt you down. But he's going to steal classified documents and doesn't expect the National Archives to come after him?
Yeah, seriously. And I mean, that was kind of the conversations in a lot of the emails that were back and forth between Trump's lawyers and the National Archives where they're like, look, dude, like, you're tying my hands here. Like, I have no other option but to turn this over to the FBI. So know that you've been warned.
Yeah.
And then basically there was another year of back and forth and back and forth and the FBI coming to Mar-a-Lago and getting an envelope and then saying, oh, that's it. And his lawyer saying, oh, that's it. And then it's more and more and more. And so this letter is just basically like begging Republicans to step in for him and tell the DOJ to stop or figure out some way to make it stop. And I don't know if that means, you know, going after Merrick Garland the way that they have been with Alvin Bragg. I don't know what that means.
Yeah. So last bit on this then, does this go anywhere? I mean, are we seeing this eventually becoming something? I mean, you know, it's great that there's all this investigation, there's all this chatter. Does it matter? Is it going to become anything?
No. Okay. I think the big piece of it is that I think that this is an example of obstruction of justice. And so if that letter then starts to provoke Republicans to get involved here, then I think that there's going to be a conversation with an inspector general.
There you go. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Sarah, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff. If you want to check out Sarah's work, SarahBurrisRawStory.com. That's the website. Thanks so much, Sarah. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You as well, our good friend Sarah Burris. Remember, check out the website, RawStory.com. Quick break. Right back.
lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1825. That was the day that saw what is widely considered the first strike for the 10-hour workday. It happened in Boston, Massachusetts. Journeymen carpenters had grown tired of being required to work from sunup to sundown. They decided it was time to make a stand. But the master carpenters who controlled the craft did not side with the journeymen. The master carpenters claimed that the day-long toil had, quote, been customary from time immemorial. With this resistance from the top, the first 10-hour workday strike went down in defeat. But the idea had been born, and soon it began to grow. Boston carpenters struck again in 1832 and again 3 years later. These strikes were also unsuccessful. But during the last strike, the workers wrote a flyer that read, quote, "We have been too long subjected to the odious, cruel, unjust, and tyrannical system which compels the operative mechanic to exhaust his physical and mental powers. We have rights and duties to perform as American citizens and members of society, which forbid us to dispose of more than 10 hours for a day's work." These words echoed to Philadelphia, where workers took up the banner for the 10-hour workday. The strike spread across the city of brotherly love, from printers to carpenters, from bakers to public employees. 10 hours became the law in Philadelphia, then throughout Pennsylvania. From there, the call for 10 hours spread across the country. Later, the movement grew into a demand for the 8-hour workday. The ability of workers to have time away from the job to live a full life of dignity is one of the core causes of the labor movement. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Jenna sent me an email during the break. And again, this trans issue, it shouldn't be this big of a deal. I don't think it really should be. But her question is flat out, yes or no. If it's your child, yes or no. And again, this isn't that kind of black and white. If you're going to, and I've said this before, I'm not a black and white, you know, hard, right, wrong kind of thinker. There's a lot of gray in this. And I know it's easy. It's easy to have this knee-jerk reaction. Absolutely not. But look, I've known people throughout the years who, you know, they're a little different. I've talked to medical people who have said, look, there are things that happen at birth that, you know, you can't explain. Why would you put into law something so draconian, so hard and fast that there's no way to help? You look at the abortion issue. You know, we talked about this yesterday. This woman who, you know, had a problem that the medical professionals couldn't help her. Almost cost her life because they didn't know legally what they could and they could not do because we've passed such draconian laws. Now, is this something we should have a conversation around? Yes. And ultimately, I come back on the very conservative view of limited government. Keep government out of my room. These are family decisions. These are difficult decisions. Nobody jumps into this going, oh boy. And I don't know that there are medical professionals who would go along with that. And if there are, then we have to have an oversight to weed that out. My view is this is why you have regulation. This is why you have people to oversee this stuff. But to say absolutely not, you can do nothing. And I want to emphasize, you know, Janice, it's very, very, very clear to me that there's much more than just what's been spoon-fed to us, that everything is the knife. Because as someone told me a couple of weeks ago, it's like Planned Parenthood and abortion. The right paints Planned Parenthood as, you know, everything they do is abortion. And the reality is it's less than 3% of what they do. Gender-affirming care is the same thing. a very, very small, minuscule percentage is actually what we're being sold. Most of it's counseling. Drug therapy, which, you know, if we want to have a conversation on whether it's good or bad, okay, that's great. But ultimately, should that not be between the family, their doctor? Remember that? Remember that, my conservative friends? Just kind of throwing that out there. I do want to hear your thoughts on this. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Again.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.